This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. The riders on the Gary Public Transportation Corporation buses will find some improvements, some changes, but they're learning about those now. That all takes effect next Tuesday as a new and improved bus schedule takes effect in Gary and for the routes that are served by GPTC. To find out more, let's talk with David Wright. He's the Planning and Marketing Manager for the Gary Public Transportation Corporation. And as always, David, thank you for joining us on the program today.
Thank you very much for having me again. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, you've got the statement that comes out, you're excited to announce, and certainly you probably are, because I know that there's been a lot of work, a lot of planning, and input that has gone into this. Fill us in from the beginning about how things stand with the GPTC these days, and what's led up to the changes in the schedule, and the changes in the schedule that will take effect next week.
Okay. Well, they are twofold. We are hopefully coming close to the end of the pandemic. I know that the mask order has been extended, but we're hopefully, you know, on the tail end. And as you know, GPTC cut service earlier this year to aid in getting people to stay at home, and because people were and ridership was going down, ridership is starting to come back up. So we are putting some of the service that we reduced back out on the street. However, it doesn't hurt to make the service better as we come out of the pandemic. So what we are doing is we're listening to riders and actually streamlining the service on our Broadway Metro Express. It's the highest ridership bus route in the region. And as we start putting more service back out there, instead of having a shuttle go the last few miles from Merrillville into Crown Point,
yeah,
the BMX is actually being extended to the Lake County Government Center and to the Ivy Tech campus in Crown Point. So that's something that we're excited about. I'm quite sure people who actually are going to work both in Northwest Indiana and in Chicago are excited about. That means that our Ivy Tech shuttle, the Route R6, is going to be suspended because the BMX is going to be covering that at a much higher frequency. And we will be adjusting our US 30 service basically it's going to be hourly all the time as opposed to just during the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't hurt to actually make improvements when you start putting service back out there. And this will actually make it easier for people to maintain social distancing because the buses are going to be more frequent going out there.
Did you find in the way the routes have been here lately during the pandemic, the worst of the pandemic, at least that we've experienced so far, and the call for ridership has probably increased as you had hoped for, are you finding that there have been more people, number one, that either want to get to the government center in Crown Point, or better still, they want to get to the Adam Benjamin VA outpatient clinic, which is not far away, and it's all on the route now. It's easier for many people, I'm sure, to get to.
Well, yes. We already have the service out there with the Ivy Tech shuttle. What people were complaining about was the BMX is more frequent than that shuttle, so there were waits when they had to transfer from the BMX to that route. So by taking the BMX all the way out there, it greatly reduces the actual travel time. Plus, they don't have to board one bus and get off another. I mean, get off one bus and get on another. So it streamlines their process. Ivy Tech, I'm sure, is happy because that means that there's no transferring between their Gary campus and the Crown Point Merrillville campus. And obviously, the people who are served by the VA outpatient clinic are much more relieved because that's, you know, half-hour service as opposed to every hour, hour and a half.
I know that they have a number of people that do go out there for doctor's appointments, for other appointments as well with the specialists that work out of the clinic, and they probably would like to be able to certainly get them out there if they happen to live in Gary or if they live along the route someplace. They'd like to be out there a lot sooner. Even if they have to wait there at the clinic, they'd like to be there.
Right. Right. Yeah. Correct. And the staff at the VA, when we were first planning our service extensions, were extremely accommodating and cooperative when it came to making sure we made the best decisions for our service.
Does it turn out, particularly in their case, that because they have certain procedures for sanitation and taking care of people because of COVID-19, that they have extra steps they have to go through, which would in turn make it longer for somebody that has a doctor's appointment or a clinic appointment of some type to get out there? Before they can get to see somebody, they'd have to go through the procedure. So this way, if they get there earlier, if they get there on time, they'll be through a lot faster, I suppose.
Right, and this gives those riders much more flexibility.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't getting us back to the 20-minute service that we were in before April of this year, but as we look at the numbers for the ridership, as people start to return, we will make sure to, add that additional service later on so people are able to remain socially distant and, get to basically back to normal, back to where we were. Ridership is starting to pick back up, as I mentioned, but once we get closer to where we were in February, we'll be able to return everything to our normal frequency.
We're talking with David Wright, who's the planning and marketing manager for the Gary Public Transportation Corporation, about the improved expanded schedule that's going to happen for the Gary bus line that begins on this next Tuesday. And I know that there have been a lot of people that have probably liked to see the changes that have happened, for example, on the US 30 shuttle. How has that shuttle basically evolved over time, and with the changes now and the more frequent service, how's that going to help people getting out to the businesses there along the highway?
Well, when we actually reduced service because of the pandemic, it actually increased frequency on the US 30 shuttle.
Mm-hmm.
Before, it was running an hour and 15 minutes roughly because it was combined with the Ivy Tech shuttle. With the Ivy Tech shuttle being suspended and that service being added to the BMX, that bus that's usually on sharing both routes no longer has to share the route. So we're actually keeping the increased service that we put out there because of the pandemic. It's kind of weird that, with a reduction in service, we actually increased the frequency on a route.
Yeah.
But that's what happened, and that's probably the only route in the region, only bus route or even transit route in the region, where the ridership is actually increased, and we didn't want to backslide when it came to that particular improvement.
Have you found that the riders, basically, if they're coming down, we'll say from Gary, they come in from even downtown Gary, for that matter, take the route all the way south on Broadway, and then they get out to US 30, are they finding it much more convenient to be able to get to the stores and the shopping malls and all along the way?
Yes. Yes, their response and the ridership numbers, obviously, was indicative that they looked at this as being a convenience. And those who are going to do business out of the Lake County Government Center doing classes, if they actually have to go on site at Ivy Tech, it's much easier to get out there, and it's much easier to read the schedules to know when you have to be at certain places. So it didn't hurt to actually listen to the riders while we were planning to put service back out there.
Now, we've mentioned this before, and when the pandemic really hit hard and you had to make all these major changes, primarily for safety reasons, for bus drivers, for staff, for riders as well, the rest of the community at large. Bring us up to date again on how the GPTC buses are being taken care of in this pandemic days.
Well, ever since we started our protocols earlier this late spring, early summer, we've had maintenance staff on site to clean each bus as it came into the Adam Benjamin Metro Center to make sure that it was sanitized. And when a bus rolls in, people get off, the staff comes on to wipe the buses clean. In addition, we've been doing regular fogging of our facilities and our buses to sanitize them. We've installed touchless hand sanitizers on every single vehicle, so people are able to use that as an extra precaution. We're requiring rear door exiting, so people don't have to cross next to each other in the vehicles as they're getting on and off. And we're looking into installing driver shields to further protect our staff. I mean, they've been on the front lines from the beginning, and this is an added measure that's, I hate to use the overused term new normal, but that's going to be the new normal in transit is driver shields. So these are the things we're going to be making changes and adjustments to make our riders and our staff much safer.
Now, with the new and improved schedule getting underway on Tuesday, September 8th, how early can folks head out there, sit at the bus stops, and wait for the changes to actually take place?
Well, our the BMX, which is the route that's the focus of this service,
right,
it starts its first trip before 5:30 in the morning. So we wanted to make sure that people were able to get to Crown Point and Merrillville early on in the morning, and also for people who are coming into Gary and going into Chicago, they're able to get on the bus from South County to get to the South Shore and to get to locations here in the city itself. Our usual hours are being maintained, basically 5 o'clock in the morning through 7 or 8 o'clock at night, 9 o'clock in some cases. But with the frequencies, people have a lot more flexibility on the BMX now.
Now, if anybody would like to see what the new schedule actually looks like so they can make note, and especially if they take the buses, especially the buses that go down into South County, as these are, where can they find out the schedules and make the notes of these?
Well, the description of the changes is on our website, GaryTransit.com, in the service, the routes and schedules section. And the new schedules, so as not to confuse people, the new schedules will not go live until Friday afternoon near the close of our weekday service. Mm-hmm. So if anyone has any questions, they can contact us at info@gptcbus.com. But those new schedules go live on GaryTransit.com Friday afternoon with all those changes.
So come out of the Labor Day holiday, they decide to check and see when the buses are going to run, they'll get the new schedule then.
Yes, they will. And later on this year, we will actually have the schedule information available on your favorite mapping software. Apple Maps and Google Maps, those services will be integrated with our schedules and our routes in real time later on this year.
David Wright is the planning and marketing manager for the Gary Public Transportation Corporation. We're learning about the new improved schedule for buses that begin on September 8th. And David, thank you for being with us.
Always a pleasure. Thank you very much for having us.
Esther Stiles is a board member for the LaPorte County PFLAG group, which is a group that is supportive of young gay, lesbian, and transgender people in the community. And that is how we find out more about an organization which is relatively new, which is entitled Out in LaPorte. And Esther Stiles is with us. Thank you for joining us on Regionally Speaking today.
Oh, sure. Thanks for having me, Chris.
How did you get involved in Out in LaPorte, and what is the group really all about?
So I got involved with Out in LaPorte, honestly, because I just saw that they were a new group that started in LaPorte City. I noticed it on Facebook, mm-hmm. And I'm a resident of LaPorte City, also an out lesbian in LaPorte County, LaPorte City.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just connected with them to find out more about them and, learn how I could get involved. Our goal as an organization really is to not only be a resource for the LGBTQ community in LaPorte, but also a resource for education, training for, the schools, for the city administration, just to provide information and resources for folks who are curious or interested in being a support or youth who need support. That is one of our primary goals, is to help put together resources in LaPorte for LGBTQ youth who maybe don't have any support, whether they don't have support to their family or through their schools. That's one of our primary goals.
I know there are probably no numbers. You don't take this information down necessarily like statistics that go out for the census, but are there a lot of young people and just folks in general in LaPorte County and in the community of LaPorte that are concerned about their gender orientation or their identity?
There's probably a lot more than we realize. Nationally, the average is 6 to 8%.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we apply that number to LaPorte with our city population, we're probably looking between somewhere between 1,500 and 2,000 individuals. And just like you said, there's no survey or data collection to get actual numbers, so we can't say for sure, but that's probably the average that we're looking at for LaPorte. Mm-hmm.
I'm sure there are organizations that are similar, that are elsewhere or close by, certainly, and they're maybe linked together because you have folks that might happen to be members in other communities as well. But is there a common bond that you note between not only the folks in LaPorte and the rest of LaPorte County, but maybe some of the surrounding counties here in Northwest Indiana about helping others out who need the help, that have questions, concerns, maybe are a little afraid of things?
I would say there's definitely been a growing support in Northwest Indiana over the last probably 5 or 6 years. That's kind of really when I got started in either talking to other folks to see if they were interested in putting something together for LaPorte. And that is sort of how PFLAG LaPorte County came about, was other folks who were interested in trying to put that together. And, you know, we did the formal, so PFLAG is a national organization.
Right.
And to be a chapter, we had to go through paperwork and designate board members, that sort of thing. And I know there have been a few other PFLAG chapters that have been developed since that time in Porter County, maybe even Lake County. I know there's another organization in Porter County, Northwest Indiana LGBTQ Alliance or something. And so I know they have also worked on putting together a few different types of support networks for LGBTQ youth, folks who identify as transgender, things like that, as well as both organizations have worked to put together Pride events during the month of June this summer. So we've had a couple of those recently.
Mm-hmm. I know the coronavirus pandemic's made it very, very difficult for everybody to get together other than just either virtually or online one way or the other, mm-hmm. rather than in person. But when you do get to talk, whether it happens to be by Zoom or whatever method it happens to be, is there any, maybe one concern, perhaps not, but maybe a group of concerns that you all have about the situation, particularly as it happens in LaPorte?
So I think in general, it is just around, I'm trying to think of how to phrase it best, really just around support in general.
Mm-hmm.
I think some individuals have certainly experienced either harassment or, you know, threatening comments, nothing that, as far as I'm aware, has risen to the level of being reported or even rising to being investigated by the Indiana Civil Rights Commission. But certainly, because Indiana is not a state that has any kind of hate crime statute or statewide protections for LGBTQ individuals, I think that's always a concern across the state, so not just in LaPorte. Or if, for example, you know, in talking about COVID with folks struggling to work, the possibility of evictions, Indiana doesn't currently have any protections that says, you know, a landlord can't kick someone out because they find out they're gay or transgender.
Right.
There's no protections to say an employer can't fire someone because they, you know, discover that they're gay or transgender. So that's always a worry in the back of many folks' minds. I don't know, you know, like I said earlier, that's been a specific issue recently in LaPorte, but that worry is always there for sure.
And I know with PFLAG, the support that they give are we mentioned earlier, primarily for young people, because they are the ones that are the most affected by any of the discrimination or comments that are made. And I know there's a great concern because those are also the youngest people that are susceptible to suicide and harm of some kind, not only from others, but to themselves.
Mm-hmm. Right. Sadly, we do, the LGBTQ community does have one of the highest rates of suicide ideation and also homelessness, because typically, you know, if a caregiver or parent finds out that their child is gay or transgender and it's not something that they understand or even support, then they're likely to kick them out or disown them. And that suicide ideation often comes from a lack of belonging.
Mm-hmm.
So I think typically people think that, you know, it comes with wrestling with the fact that they're gay or transgender, and it's in And certainly that can be true, but because of the disconnect from family and community.
Are there opportunities that come up, even though we're focusing on the group because it's out in LaPorte, any opportunities that come up to be able to work with similar groups or individuals that live, say, in Michigan City that are able to help you out and get the word out, explain to people what it's all about?
So I think that that's going to be a growing focus and trend across the county for mm-hmm. sure. You know, PFLAG has, even though we cover all of LaPorte County, it certainly has been more active in Michigan City because folks have been a little more engaged there. We are looking hopefully to widen that circle and include folks in LaPorte and include other sites that make that support more accessible for LaPorte City and for folks in the county. For Heights, Union Mills, you know, places that definitely require more transportation and that don't have the same kind of support that you might find in one of the larger municipalities in the county.
Now, if anybody's interested in learning more about Out in LaPorte or getting involved in the organization, how can they do that?
The best way to find us is on Facebook. The group is a public group, so you can just, you know, put that in the search bar on Facebook. The administrators of the group, you know, check if there's folks who are interested in connecting one of us, they can just post that to the group and one of us will reach out to them for sure. But that's probably the easiest way to connect.
Esther Stiles is a LaPorte County PFLAG board member, and she's very active as well in the group, which is called Out in LaPorte. And Esther, thank you for being with us to talk about the organization, and we hope that we've shed light on the group as well as encourage people that want to know more that can get hold of you.
Thank you, Chris. It was a joy talking to you.
This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. From time to time, we check in with mayors of communities here in Northwest Indiana, in particular dealing with the pandemic, how they're dealing in their particular communities with the pandemic. Today, we happen to have Hobart Mayor Brian Snedeker with us. And Mayor Snedeker, thanks for joining us today.
Glad to be with you, Chris.
Well, since the pandemic really hit hard, and of course, then after that came right away after that, is when the stay-at-home orders and businesses had to close came in back in March. How has the city of Hobart been able to deal with the situation, and where do things stand right now?
Yeah, we took a pretty aggressive response to it when we started realizing this was something that communities was going to have to prepare for and plan ahead. We quickly got together our leadership team and initiated steps, everything from employees working for the city. Certainly there had to be some furloughs for part-time employees, and then employees that could work remotely. We implemented some programs for that where they could continue to work and work from their computers at home. We also understood that police and fire have to continue to do their job along with public works. So we equipped our departments with PPE that could give protection. Our ambulance services, they put together a plan where if there was a call that was COVID, symptoms, then they would suit up mm-hmm. and only certain individuals would go inside the structure to take the person, if need be, to the hospital. And then our police department, certainly they had PPE available to them. As you know, it's not always the easiest thing in the world to wear a mask or PPE in an emergency response. Sometimes you don't have a chance to do it and prepare. But I will say that as a community, we have fared very, very well. We've had a very low positive rate within our employees. We have about 250 employees. Mm-hmm. And I believe we're in single digits as far as positives. As a community, we have also fared fairly well. We've worked closely with St. Mary's Community Health Care. And we've had ongoing, during like March and April, we were having weekly meetings with them, and we would remote in from City Hall. And then I also started a program with other mayors in Lake Porter and LaPorte County where I requested that we would come in on a Zoom meeting every Wednesday morning. And that was really a big help to all of us because we shared as mayors what we were doing, what preventions we were doing, how we were handling staffing, how we were handling operations within the city, dealing with our citizens. And that helped immensely. And we also would then coordinate some of the Zoom meetings with the governor's office and other state and federal officials. So we really tried to be a unified front as far as government responses in Northwest Indiana. And so the pandemic has absolutely had an impact financially on communities. Thank goodness the CARES Act is allowing communities, if they can substantiate expenses that they've put out for PPE and other related expenditures, we're able to recover some of that from the federal government. And so I think we still have to be vigilant. This is far from being over, so we have to continue to put in steps.
Now, since the city of Hobart is primarily made up of small businesses, a lot of independent businesses, was it really, really rough on them, at least at first, and have they been able to recover as much as they possibly can after having to close down because everything was closed and everybody had to stay at home, for at least for a while?
Yeah, that's a very good question because, as you know, some restaurants decided to close down during the heat of the pandemic, and so what they did, some of them that closed down, they did some remodeling and updates to their building, so they made it purposeful for them during that time. Some businesses decided to stay open. As you know, our community has a substantial amount of retail and restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
So some of the restaurants stayed open, and they actually did very well on their takeout and delivery. Many people, as you know, instead of going to the grocery store every day, they would order out and have it delivered so they didn't have to go out of their homes. So that actually worked to the advantage of a few of the restaurants. Our retail, such as the mall and some of the other retail businesses along the Route 30 corridor, certainly they closed down for periods of time, you know, during March and April and May. And even into June. But when they were able to reopen, some stores weren't able to open right away because they had furloughed their employees, and getting staffing back in place took some time. In fact, I was with the mall manager, and we were talking, and he was giving some success stories on some of the businesses and how they've done very well. The mall has been closing at 7 o'clock, and so they're open for 8 hours, and how that has helped many of the stores in their scheduling of employees, and how during those 8 hours, some of the stores have been doing a phenomenal amount of business. So I think the recovery is coming. I think there's some businesses and retail that are still getting back to maybe where they were before the pandemic. But I think we still have, you know, we still have a ways to go because we know this pandemic is not, it's still present,
mm-hmm.
and we still have to have safeguards in place. We are still being very careful, like in City Hall, employees as well as people visiting City Hall are expected to have their face coverings on while they're in the public hallways and public areas of the building. So we still believe that preventative measures do need to be exercised.
Well, it sounds like that the city of Hobart is prepared to continue on as best possible with the situation. Are the residents, as best as you can get in your input with them, find out what they're facing, and they let you all know that you're doing the best you can with what you have to work with right now?
Yes, the public has responded very well. Now, I will tell you, as you know, this has been going on for several months. There are some people that are, you know, frustrated with the face coverings and those types of PPE requirements. And some people do not believe they should be wearing the face coverings. And To some degree, we respect that. You know, we're not going to take steps to create any kind of enforcement efforts. We encourage it, but we also understand people do have to make decisions for themselves. Now, I will tell you that there's still a lot of stores, especially in the mall, where you can't enter their store without having a face covering.
Yeah, I've discovered that myself, yes.
Yes.
It's interesting.
And so many stores are requiring that, which I think is a good preventative measure. But, you know, through this whole thing, I have encouraged people to get outside, to enjoy the fresh weather of the spring and summer, enjoy the lakefront, you know, keep social distancing and wear masks if in situations where you may need to. But I've always encouraged people to get out and still exercise because, you know, for people to lock themselves in their home for 3 or 4 months, that is not good either mentally or from a physical standpoint. And so I've encouraged people to still get out and exercise and use good judgment. But I think our community has responded well during this time.
Mayor Santicurri, we know that when you first ran for mayor 13 years ago, you ran as a Democrat. You've been a Democrat as a mayor since then. But just recently, you've decided after, I guess, a lot of thought and consideration that you changed affiliation in parties from the Democrat to Republican. There were reasons, and you mentioned that, I guess, when you made your announcement at Festival Park about this. What were your concerns, and are your concerns now, that made you decide to switch from a Democrat to a Republican?
Let me first say, Chris, mm-hmm. that I work with amazing people. I work with some amazing Democrats, work with some amazing Republicans. So my decision was not based on anything to do with local relationships and local operations or local politics.
Mm-hmm.
My decision was based on what I felt like nationally I could no longer stand in a unified front with. I have been a Democratic mayor now for 12 and a half years. I was a police chief before I became mayor, and I supported the Democratic mayor while I was police chief. But there comes a time when you have to look at what is going on in this nation, and I have to make a decision as a mayor. And I have to be responsive to myself and to my family and to those that have supported and those that I represent. And I'm not trying to necessarily change anybody's political viewpoints. That's something they have to review and they have to determine for themselves. But for me in my home, I felt that I had to take a stand on what I felt was representative of my personal convictions, and also not just my convictions, but what I felt as a nation I could not agree with the Democratic Party nationally. And so I made that decision that I felt that the Republican Party, you know, sometimes people think you change a part to a party, you're automatically lockstep with everybody in that party. You know, when I made that decision, I made a change to the Republican Party. And I felt that the party's principles and basic views nationally was more in line with my views, my morals, and my principles. And so I made the decision. Wasn't made lightly. 12 and a half years as a Democratic mayor.
Mm-hmm.
So it was... It was through months of considering what I felt was best.
Do you think that now that you made the switch in political parties, that you feel that what is currently in the administration with Governor Holcomb and Lieutenant Governor Crouch, that their thoughts and views, their principles are closer to yours?
I do commend Governor Holcomb. I think that he's done some really good things for Northwest Indiana. I think that he has understood the importance of Lake County and Northwest Indiana as a whole. I don't think that governors in the past, some of them, have always been as quick to understand the importance of what Northwest Indiana brings to the rest of the state, and so I commend him in his efforts. I think that he understands that working across the aisle is how you get things accomplished, and I'm a big believer in that. I don't believe in making decisions based on party affiliation. I think what you have to do is represent the people that you've been elected to represent and be a consensus builder. Get things done. And that's what I've always tried to use as my philosophy in going forward.
Well, Mayor Snedeker, thank you for spending time with us, explaining in great detail your feelings and concerns that made you first decide to make the change of political affiliation. And thank you for the update on how the community of Hobart is dealing with the pandemic. We appreciate your comments today.
Thank you, Chris.
That's Hobart Mayor Brian Snedeker, and you're listening to Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. And that's it for today and for this week. I'm Chris Nolte. Thank you to Gary Public Transportation Corporation Director of Planning and Marketing David Wright for his conversation about the new and improved bus schedule that takes effect on Tuesday, September 8th, and to our other guests as well. They're on the program today, too. We'll be back with you with another Regionally Speaking after the Labor Day holiday on Tuesday. Hope you'll join us for that.